This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for lectures, features, and radio shows. And now, here's Coy Barefoot.
It's always an honor to welcome back to the program a good friend of the program, Ed Murphy, an astronomer at the University of Virginia. We always look forward to him stopping by. And today is truly a magnificent day in human history. This is absolutely amazing.
It is.
They have found water. They have found H2O water, not just some liquid, but they have found water on Mars. And this news breaking just this afternoon. This is amazing. Are you surprised, or did you sort of feel like...
Yeah, oh, no. I think everyone's felt for a while that there's definitely ice on Mars, but this is really the first time that we've been able to land there, pick it up, sample it, and prove that it really is water ice.
That's amazing.
It is.
So back us up now and remind us, what exactly is there that's doing this? It's not a rover. This is a stationary thing that's picking stuff up.
That's right. It's the Mars Polar Lander. It landed up near the North Pole of Mars, actually as far north as we would consider northern Canada or northern Alaska on the surface of Mars. And it was there specifically to look. We sent it to a place where scientists felt there was clear evidence that there was frozen water in the soil, that there was ice down there in the soil. But we'd never actually sampled it. And the whole goal of this vehicle is to go there and dig down into the ice and look at its proof, first of all, that it's ice, and then look at its history over time and how has it been there and how does it behave and, more importantly, what other things do we find mixed in with the ice?
Now, you were telling me before we went on the air that this has not been an easy thing. Number one, getting the thing there and getting it set up is a bit of a crapshoot. You just hope everything works in the right order. But actually getting the stuff into to the lander and doing these experiments hasn't been easy.
That's right. It's been a lot harder, I think, than they anticipated to dig into this icy soil and then sample it and then bring that icy soil into the ovens where they bake it and then study what the soil is made of, what's in there. The first problem they had with the soil the first time they put a scoop on the oven was that there was a little screen to prevent rocks from falling into the oven. And they couldn't shake the material through the screen. It was so clumpy. They had to shake it a lot more than they had originally expected. So they got that first sample in, but it had sat for so long on the shaking screen that it had completely dried out. There was no water ice in it. So for the past few weeks, they've been trying to figure out how to get a fresh sample of ice and get it into the oven as quickly as they can before the ice has a chance to literally evaporate out of the soil. And they've been working on that the last few weeks, and they had a kind of a silly episode the other day where they dug in the soil. They got this fresh sample. They went over to the oven to dump it out. They turned the scoop upside down, and the material just stuck inside the scoop. It wouldn't fall out. So they had to regroup again, and they moved the arm back away from the oven, let it sit for a day, and it dried out. And when it dried out, they turned the scoop over, and it all fell out. But at that point, they knew the ice was gone. So they've been struggling to figure out how to get this very sticky, clumpy, icy stuff from the ground and into the oven. And it appears this afternoon now that they finally succeeded.
And they have indeed confirmed H2O on the planet Mars. We're talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. Ed, remind us again, how far away is Mars?
So Mars is a little more than 1.5 times further from the sun than we are. So
okay. And how are we actually telling this lander to do something? And from the time we press a button here, how long does it take before it actually does it?
It can take anywhere from a few minutes up to 16 minutes to talk with the vehicles on Mars. And so it's all done by pre-programmed sequences. The scientists and engineers here on Earth decide what they would like the landers or the rovers to do. And then they package that up as a whole series of commands that are sent up by radio waves. Typically, it's not sent directly to the craft on the surface, but it's sent to spacecraft that are in orbit around Mars, which then relay it down to the craft on the surface. It stores those commands away, and then it executes them at the time we tell them to execute a certain command.
Okay. How many things are orbiting Mars right now?
How many are? Probably about 5 right now, if
really?
I think about it.
Yeah,
wow. We have. So the Europeans have a large Mars orbiter in orbit. We have the Mars Climate Observer and the Mars Odyssey, which are both operating in orbit. The Mars Global Surveyor was operating up until last fall when it failed. So there are quite a few spacecraft in orbit around Mars.
So what are they? We're talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. What's the next step, you think, now that they've confirmed we have found water on Mars? Are they going to? It's not the kind of... It's not like there's a scoop of water.
That's right.
You can't like look in it for bugs.
No. Well, they do have microscopes to look in it to see what's there. No one believes that they'll actually find microbes there. But I think the next really interesting result that will come out is to find out what else is there besides the water. What other compounds, possibly organic compounds, are in the soil? For example, a recent analysis discovered that the soil on Mars is slightly alkaline and would actually be quite friendly to life. The pH of the soil, the chemistry of the soil, it had magnesium and other minerals that are required for things to grow in the soil. So it turns out it's actually a very favorable place.
What would be the one thing that we would find where we'd be like, oh my gosh, would it be carbon?
Yeah, if there were some kind of organic compounds in the soil, then people would really raise the eyebrows at that.
Wow. So we have now confirmed there's water on two planets in our solar system.
That's right. And
that's huge.
That's right. And we suspect that it's on at least a couple more in the solar system.
Planets or moons?
Moons in those cases. But to be honest, those moons are almost as big as some of the planets in our solar system.
Let's talk about that, because I think that's one thing. Most people, when they think about exploration or life out there, they tend not to think about the moons. They tend to think about the planets.
Yep.
But as you point out, some of those moons in our solar system are just as big as planets.
That's right.
They're huge.
The moons of Jupiter, Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto, they're all about the size of our moon or bigger. And in some cases, Ganymede, for example, Jupiter's largest moon, is actually bigger than the planet Mercury. So it would be a planet in its own right if it wasn't for the fact that it was in orbit around Jupiter. Titan, Saturn's large moon, is another very large moon.
And that's breaking news today, of course, as well, is the news coming from research going on Titan, one of the moons of Saturn. What have we discovered there?
So Titan's a really interesting moon in that we've known for a long time that it has a very thick atmosphere around it. And from chemistry, from studying the light that Titan reflects from the sun, we've realized for a long time that there are actually organic compounds in the atmosphere of Titan, probably naturally occurring, not due to life. But it would be really interesting to study those and study the chemistry of Titan. And what's been recently discovered is that these compounds, propane, methane, ethane, exist as a liquid on the surface of Titan, literally in liquid lakes and seas on the surface.
And that's the news that was announced this morning, that scientists have confirmed this evidence, this presence of a liquid lake on Titan, moon of Saturn, but it's not water.
No, it's 300 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. So at that temperature, water's frozen completely solid. But something that can exist at those temperatures, and in fact, now we have evidence for it, is that methane, ethane, propane, butane, they would all exist as liquids at the temperatures and pressures that we find on Titan. And what's interesting is, in mapping it from orbit with our spacecraft, they've seen large flat areas, both with radar and with infrared cameras that look in a part of the spectrum that we can't see with our eyes. These areas look like lakes and seas. They're very flat. They have very low reflectivity. They seem to be perfect places to look for this liquid pooling on the surface.
And would it move and have a consistency like water? I can't picture a lake of butane.
Most of us have it in our backyard, those propane tanks that we have in our backyard. Of course, when you take those and you slosh them around, that's a liquid in there. It's just that when you release it to atmospheric pressure, it turns into a gas. But in fact, we are, in our everyday lives, familiar with, in butane, everyone has seen the lighters, a butane lighter. It's a liquid in there.
Yeah, yeah. So, and methane, there's liquid methane as
well. Liquid methane. Well, they actually believe, so the discovery they announced today was that they found liquid ethane on Titan. But ethane is a small component of the atmosphere, a small component. They think methane is the much larger one, and they think the ethane is probably dissolved in a liquid methane lake.
So, wow.
It's amazing. I mean, what's even more amazing about Titan was we landed a probe there in January of 2005, the Huygens probe. And as it parachuted down through the atmosphere, it was taking pictures of the surface, and it showed channels that were clearly cut. They look exactly like river channels and drainage channels on Earth. It looks like it was cut by a running fluid. And as I said, it's much too cold for water to be a liquid at 300 degrees below zero. It had long been known that the temperatures and pressures were just right for methane to exist as a liquid. And everyone's first thought was that these channels were cut by liquid methane falling out of the atmosphere as a rain, raining down on the surface and cutting these channels on the surface.
Wow. And with the discovery today now confirming that in all likelihood, that is what's happening on Titan.
That's right. That we do now see where this liquid methane ends up. It ends up pooling in these lakes and things that are seas.
Amazing. We're talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. Big news today, folks. They have confirmed water, the discovery of water on the planet Mars, and they have confirmed liquid lakes flowing on the moon of Saturn, Titan. What about the other moons? Some other interesting research going on some of the other moons.
That's right. So the other really interesting moons are Europa, which is a giant moon of Jupiter, which has, we believe, a liquid water ocean underneath a cap of solid frozen water ice. And we have very good evidence from the orbiting spacecraft we've put in orbit around Jupiter that under that ice that we see on Europa, there's a liquid water ocean. In particular, we see cracks in the ice. And as these cracks open up, the liquid appears to gush up and fill in those cracks with a brownish-colored material that is probably some water that has other compounds mixed in with it. But we've never landed on Europa, so we haven't sampled this directly, but we have really good evidence that it's water ice.
So if you could send a lander. Ed Murphy's in charge of NASA.
That's right.
Where do we send something that has the best prospects, you think, of finding some type of life in water?
Europa, I think, is without a doubt the place to go. We have very good evidence that there's a giant liquid water ocean underneath that ice. And what's interesting is you might say, at Jupiter's distance from the sun, it's quite cold. How does that water stay liquid? Why hasn't it frozen? And the answer is the tides from Jupiter. Jupiter is 318 times the mass of the Earth. It raises monstrously huge tides on its inner moons. And it's like squeezing a ball where you squeeze and release and squeeze and release. It heats the interior of the ball up. As these moons are squeezed and released by Jupiter's tides, the interior of the moons heat up. And that's what keeps the water liquid on Europa. So the inner moon of Jupiter, Io, has active volcanoes on the surface. The squeezing and releasing is so severe there that the interior is molten, and you've got volcanoes, active volcanoes on the surface. The belief with Europa is that underneath this liquid water ocean, there could be volcanoes down there. And what we've seen here on Earth is in the deep ocean vents on Earth.
Those worms, yeah.
Exactly. They're worms. They're other creatures that don't use sunlight to survive. They actually use the chemicals and the compounds coming out of underwater vents to survive. So if that's happening on Earth, Europa would be an excellent place to go visit.
Wow. Amazing. Absolutely fascinating stuff. We are talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. And folks, you know the phone lines are always open for you. 977-1070. If you've got a question for Ed, now is the time to ask. Again, 977-1070. And I also want to thank you for your hospitality the other evening. Allison and I brought the kids up to the public night at the McCormick Observatory, and evidently we picked the wrong night to come because there were a billion people up there.
That's right.
I was really shocked. We got to the top of that mountain. I'm like, oh my gosh, where are we going to park? There were so many people there.
Yeah, it was a really busy night. We had 170 that night, which is a lot more than usual. So
yeah, just to look through the telescope.
That's right.
And that telescope, that was the first time I'd actually seen it, because I've seen the outside of the building many times, but that's the original telescope.
It's the original telescope on the original mount in the original dome with most of the original equipment.
Amazing. So, which, what, 1880?
1885. It's 123 years old.
Wow.
And it's on the National Register of Historic Places.
Wow. So, that's the same year they built the chapel, I think, at UVA.
Oh, that might be. Yeah.
That's fitting. Yeah. The church and the observatory. We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer. So what's coming up in August? It's the Perseids, right?
The Perseid meteor shower on the morning, Tuesday morning, August 12th, is the annual Perseid meteor shower. This year, we've got a bad moon interfering. So the moon is waxing gibbous. So gibbous is when it's between half and full, which means it's very bright in the sky, and it'll be up there interfering. So normally the Perseids are good from 11 p.m. until sunrise, but with that bright moon up, you'll have to wait till it sets. And so on the morning of August 12th, the Perseids will be best from about 1:30 in the morning after the moon sets until sunrise. So it's a pretty late night.
Now, for somebody who has not had the joy of scanning the sky for the Perseids, give us a Perseids Meteor Shower 101.
So what they are is they're shooting stars, which is a misnomer. They have nothing at all to do with stars. You see these little streaks of light in the sky, and they come from little particles that are just a bit bigger than a large grain of sand. And they're moving at about 133,000 miles an hour, and they slam into the Earth's atmosphere, and they compress the air, and they heat it up so that it glows, and you see this bright streak of light in the sky.
So it's the air in front of it that's actually glowing, not the object itself?
Not the object itself, that's right. The object itself is tiny, and its job, really, it just compresses the air in front of it, and when you compress a gas, the gas heats up. And it gets hot enough that it starts to glow, and it leaves that glowing trail behind that you see in the sky.
Ah, interesting.
And on a good Perseid night, you'll see, if you're under dark country skies away from the city lights, you'll see about one Perseid per minute on a really good night.
Wow. Now, do you remember your first Perseids?
You know, I do. When I was a kid, I grew up in Chicago, so light pollution was a big problem there. And I remember going out with my brothers and in the course of a few hours seeing just a couple, but it was enough.
Yeah, so. Yeah, you were hooked.
That's right. Oh, absolutely.
My guest is Ed Murphy, UVA astronomer. Now, folks around here may not know about this because we're not going to be able to see it except online, but we want to alert people that they can go online and watch this this event, which was is tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning, early tomorrow morning. There's a total eclipse of the sun tomorrow, which is when the moon passes between the Earth and the sun, and the shadow of the moon is cast down onto the Earth. And there's a little spot that's at best about 160 miles wide, and if you happen to be inside that spot, you see the sun completely disappear in the middle of the day. Over the course of an hour, the sun disappears and it's gone for a few minutes and then it reappears, and while it's gone the stars come out, the nighttime animals come out. It's really an amazing, truly amazing sight to see.
And but we won't be able to see that from here tomorrow.
That's right. No, yeah, it's in Canada, northern Greenland, and then it crosses over the North Pole and goes down into Russia and Mongolia and China. So here the only option for seeing it is online. There are lots of broadcasts from Russia and China to have it carry the eclipse live tomorrow from about 6:30 in the morning till about 7:30 in the morning.
There you go. UVA astronomer Ed Murphy, always a pleasure and an honor to have you in studio.
Well,
thank you for being here.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
You've been listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. The show is on the air Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 in the afternoon. Join in on the show by calling 434-977-1070. Or feel free to leave a comment on the show at SeavillePodcast.com. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.